The topic is a little interesting today, I will say, because I last time we did a little something in business, as I expressed before, like I don't want to do something too business related because I have to speak to every single shear, and I like to do that when there's more than only a few people here. But I was thinking about the episode with Dino. And this week's parsha, of course, is going to become, Vayishlach is going to become this. And it sounds very, how do we prevent the incident? So for those that know or don't know, I think many of us actually correctly don't know, because there are so many different Mefarshim who say so many different things with the abduction of Dina. Many point out that it was very simple, sounds simple. It was a rape, right? Yaakov decides to pick, to settle outside of Shechem, clearly wanting to make a demarcation, as he will in Mitzrayim, right? They live in the land of Goshen, to show that there are different nations, and we have always taken the Avram Havino klal of Ger V'Toshav Anochi, Rav Soloveitchik writes, that even when you live in a foreign land and you're, you know, happy to have the ability to have religious freedom and to be able to vote, and, you know, the Supreme Court just passed a very interesting law that the governments, they're talking specifically about New York, the governor is not allowed to mandate us not being able to dominate in shuls, churches, v'chulu. And the question here is, what exactly happened to Dina? So we are, Rav Soloveitchik said, Ger V'Toshav Anochi, even if we're very comfortable in the land, we should always realize we're gerim, we're foreigners. And in fact, we have a lot of different rules and regulations that we follow to make sure that we realize that. And Jews were supposed to be different. We, you, me, we have specific challenges in that we very much look like them. We dress like them. Maybe we don't look so much like them, but we dress like them. And therefore, one could even argue wearing a yarmulke in itself, even though that's not the original reason. The word yarmulke means Yoram Malka, to fear the Ribbono Shel, to fear God, that we recognize it. But that's obviously a very distinguishing factor. But then you go ahead and put on a hat, and then all of a sudden you're like them again. So how do we distinguish ourselves? So seemingly Yaakov wanted to do this, and we learn that in Eretz Goshen, many parshas from now, not many parshas from now, but a few weeks from now really, Yaakov Avinu will insist that if the brothers have to go down to Mitzrayim, right, because there was a famine, they have to distinguish themselves and go into this different city that was set up for them, so that it can be who they are, so they don't have to intermingle in a way that will be inappropriate. And here, the ultimate really slap in the face is that Yaakov literally does not want this specific case to happen, right? So there are many Mefarshim who say that this wasn't actually a rape. This is, I know, before the Me Too movement, but it really kind of shows really a difference between us and the other nations in terms of our rules and regulations, which we'll discuss today, which is very directly related to business. And that is that we distinguish ourselves in different ways. So, for example, we have the laws of Yichud, which we'll discuss briefly, although we'll give a very long shiur on this topic of Yichud in another time. The laws of Yichud really set us apart. And I always said that, you know, all these people that got in trouble during the Me Too movement. Right, so there are actually people. There was an article written in the New York Times about tzniut. Somebody, right, about, right, exactly, about being Shomer Negia. What's her name? I forget her name. Well, thank you. Mayim Bialik wrote, I was saying Blossom, but they wouldn't know what I'm talking about. Right, so she wrote this whole article about, she got in a lot of trouble for it, by the way, because her premise was, is that being an Orthodox Jew, so the laws that women have of tznius, which, you know, they follow, really protects them against this. Now, really, the laws of Yichud protect them the most. And I was thinking that if any of these people, you know, I don't want to say the name in a base medrash, but I'll say the name, if Harvey Weinstein, who's Jewish, would have protected himself with the laws of Yichud, this wouldn't be a shiloh at all. He never would have had this. So here you have the situation of Dina. And again, according to some, there wasn't an actual rape. It's interesting. The Beis HaLevi writes a very interesting idea. The Beis HaLevi says that he's not so sure that the violation here was actually of rape. What happened? So he gives different reasons. One of the big questions that are asked, the Maharal and others ask, how is it possible that the brothers, Shimon and Levi, destroyed the city? They killed everyone, right? That's crazy. Think about what happened here. It's a crazy story. So one could be based on the Rambam. The Rambam writes in Hilchos Malachim, I think in Perek Yadalit, around Vav or Zayin, Halacha says, he actually justifies and explains that we know that the non-Jewish nations have rules and regulations that they have to keep. The seven Noahide laws, right? Sheva Mitzvos B'nei Noach. One of those laws, which is a very important law, is Dinehem. They have to have Dinehem. It actually relates to us. It relates to the business world a lot because we believe in a concept called Dinei D'Malchus Adina. The law of the land is the law. And even though there might be, and there are, many laws of the land that have nothing to do with halacha, right? There's no place in halacha that it says, you know, you have to travel 55 miles an hour. It doesn't say that anywhere. You're not going to find that. So why, when I get pulled over, can't I just say to the police officer, no, I'm religious. I can't be, it's not in the Torah. Show me in the Torah. Right? Okay, you could argue, you know, Shema Samod is not forsaken, the guy's drunk, or the guy's, but it's not in the Torah. But what is a concept called Dina D'Malchus Adina. The rabbi said that the law of the land, why? Based on the Sheva Mitzvos B'nei Noach. That you have to define rules and regulations in society so society works. It says the Rambam, interestingly. You know what happened in Shechem? What happened in that town? The people didn't care. They didn't do anything. They knew exactly what was happening. Possibly, the Beis HaLevi says, what happened is she was abducted. She was kidnapped. Now, whether or not it was consensual, not consensual, that's part of the issue. And I've read a bunch of articles here and there, and then some of the Meforshim Harishonim comment on what would be considered to be rape. Maybe, as the Beis HaLevi learns out, based on the Gemara in Sanhedrin, says something fascinating, that the issue there was something totally different. We have to be a little bit mature to discuss the topic, but he says that it was what we called Bial Kolo Gadarko. That he had relations with her in an inappropriate way that was not yet defined as something that people do, which was in itself considered an immorality from the times of Noach. They recognized the fact. Rashi writes it on the Pesukim. Rashi says that the world was destroyed and then almost destroyed again. Right, Noach makes the mistake of realizing. On one hand, we realize that the mistake of Noach, right after he comes out of the teva, what happens? What does he do? What's the first thing that he plants? Anybody know? What? A vineyard, right? If anything, he could have planted. So, what happens when you plant a vineyard? Exactly, right? He planted a vineyard. I guess it grew very quickly, and he didn't have delicious grapes with it. He made wine with it, and he sinned a great sin. So Rashi says, to protect us against that, and then probably the Dor HaMabul itself, right? There was tremendous immorality that was like, it's hard to explain the way the Meforshim speak about the immorality during the time of that. There was already what we call Gedarim. Gedarim is what we exist upon. You know, when we, my youngest son has a test on the 39 Malachos. So he asked a good kasha, which I'm sure you've asked yourself. He said, Abba, can we be honest here? We just went through the 39 Malachos. There aren't 39 Malachos. There are like 6,000, 6 million. There's a lot of malach, right? Because the moment you turn around, you go, no, that. And when I said to him, can you name, I said, name five malachos. It's on his test. Name five malachos. Right? Malachos of Shabbos. I'm not going to ask you the question. I don't want to put you on the spot. But he started to bring up malachos that aren't actual, they're part of a malacha, right? You know, the famous.
You started bringing up toldos instead.
Right, exactly. I should be lucky, I should bring up toldos. But I said, right, everybody said, muksa, you know, everything's muksa. Muksa, everything's also goes to muksa. I said, well, muksa is, you know, what malach is muksa, and it, meaning he thinks the reason why, this is a common misconception, right? The reason why I can't drive a car in Shabbos is because it's muksa. I said, no, it's much worse than that, right? What did he say?
Muksa.
It's muksa, right? That's a, like a common, it's, like, it's a muksa. Everything's muksa. Right, it's much worse than muksa. And it's a deraisa, you know. Many of the poskim write. Rav Avad Yosef has a startling tshuva where he says the surim that you do every second that car is driving is nuts. It's crazy, right? Because of the gas and the chulu.
Like one of the examples,
right.
You're completing an admission.
Right, exactly. Right, exactly. Very good. So there's so much going on there. There's Boina, there's Makavah Patish, right? So electric car is similarly going to have problems. Electric in itself is a chiddush nifla, is a beautiful thing, because the Chazon Ish, when electricity came to the forefront, so there was a question of what is the malacha. Rav Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva. Rav Moshe says, not everybody agrees what's usher about electricity. It's usher for sure, but everybody says it's usher, right? It's kind of a strange thing to say. So the Chazon Ish was the strictest, and he said any form of electricity, whether it's lights or your air conditioning or a fan or whatever it is an usher daraisa. He was mechadish this idea of boned v'chula. And others say, which is important for Hilchos Shabbos, not for now, said that it might be an usher derabanan. Not lights in itself, many seem to say is a daraisa, but derabanan, this is important for ideas of a chola, chola shem bo shlakana. A question that just came up in these days is Rabbi Sobolowski was asked, he has a shir that he gives every week on the topic of modern day shilas, the shiloh of the week, he calls it, right? What question did I get? This is a very common shiloh now with COVID. So we're a little bit off the topic, but we'll get back on in a second because of my ADD, sorry. So this is a very common question, right? A person has to go into a building on Shabbos, right? I don't know where, whatever. We can give different examples. The easiest example to give is a hospital. He's going to visit his friend who's in the hospital. You cannot get into a hospital anymore without having your temperature taken. So they're all different forms. In America, I don't know. I've only gone into a few buildings when I was in America. But for example, in Frisch, so in order to get into the building, they do a body scan of you, right? So you walk into the building after you get all your certificates that you're allowed to come into the building. So then they body scan your body. So the guy's like, you should know, by the way, your BMI is really high. You know, really need to lose weight. I'm like, what does that have to do with COVID? You don't know, I'm just telling you. No, I'm kidding. So, but they take your temperature. You didn't do anything. You don't have to put your hands up. It's not like, you go into the TSA. You don't do anything. You just walk into the thing and it does it. So this is a big shiloh nowadays. Sometimes when you go into, you guys have experiences where you go into a place, the guy takes your temperature. So what if, let's assume for a moment, you're in America, it's a guy, right? And you need to get into the building. The question is, what do you mean you need to get into the building? That's going to be the key shiloh over here in our generation. But you have all these different questions that revolve around, this thing. Whatever, at the end of the day, it's not so pusher that it's allowed for somebody to take your temperature. The temperature that's allowed, do you ever see the old temperature things? The thermometers with the mercury, that's not as problematic, assuming a person's a chola. But going back onto our topic, so we have so many different things that open us up to, so what exactly happened, we're going back to our story, what exactly happened to Dina, what was exactly the story, right? So the Rambam writes that there's these established rules and regulations, and there were gedarim. So we have gedarim, we have fences that are set up, we as Jews have the biggest fences of them all. So because of the fact that I don't want to even come close to touching my phone on Shabbos, right? Using my phone, I should say, which is the real Isser, I say I can't even move my phone. I can't do anything with my phone, right? There are different kind of cases that you can't. We know Gedarim better than anybody else. And the Gedar, as we just pointed out, and again, this goes to the business world, is the Gedar of saying what? Is saying Yichud. I think Yichud is probably the greatest example, right? The story of Dina, again, I understand that we don't understand the story, and that my proof is I can give you five different Mephoshim who say different things of exactly what happened there. Some hold Dina partly responsible, because, again, this was this whole article going back to the article that we spoke about in the New York Times, with Mayim Bialik, is that she said that because Orthodox Jews dress sneezingly, it helps in not bringing upon when a person dresses a certain way, quote unquote, it leads the man on. She got into a lot of trouble. She said, "Oh, so you're saying that a person deserves to be raped if they dress inappropriately?" Whatever. It's an interesting topic to fight over. What's true? What's not true? But in the sense of gedarim, right, is the laws of yichud. So let's just briefly, very briefly, we're going to touch upon a few different of the laws that, again, when it comes to yichud, I think specifically it's something that when you enter the business world, you really have to set your gedarim and understand it well. You got to learn the laws. I related last week, with a few guys that were here last week, we related the Chafetz Chaim story, right? The rabbi of a shul comes to the Chafetz Chaim for a bracha, and he says, "I can't go into Rabbanus anymore. It's so, I can't take it anymore. There's so many questions. There's so many things going on in my shul. I'm leaving the business world. And I want a bracha. I'm leaving the rabbinical world. I'm going into the business world." So the Chavetz Chaim, maybe not so common, apparently laughed. And he said, what are you doing? He goes, what do you think, that's going to be easier? He goes, do you know how many shilas come up in the business world? Do you know how many things go? Forget about the laws which we'll discuss this year of taking interest, the laws of Gneva Stas, right? There's so many. But then there's the interaction with the opposite sex. Is there interaction with non-Jews, right? And as I just said from our parsha, seemingly Yaakov wanted to draw himself apart from who? From the other nations. And we establish these different laws in saying it. This week's parsha actually also teaches us something that Goyim can never understand. Gid Hanoshe, right? So we learn a law that Yaakov gets defeated, right? Not really defeated, he actually wins. But he gets hit in the thigh. And because of that, we have a law called Gid Hanoshe. You're not allowed to have a filet mignon steak, right? You're not allowed to. Now, there could be somebody sitting here and saying, what are you talking about, Rav Hartzian? I have filet mignon. I know restaurants that sell filet mignon. How can it be? Anybody know how? Right. It's filet mignon with the... That's not really true. I'll tell you something interesting. Here in Eretz Yisrael, there is a restaurant, Lechem Basar. You know this? Lechem Basar. A lot of the Lechem Basars are under Machbud, or Rav Machbud. Right. So they have a certain... They sell there, and on the Hebrew menu, not in the English menu, on the Hebrew menu, there's a star, at least in the old days, back when people went to restaurants before COVID. So it says on there's a star, and it says, this meat can only be eaten by Svardim. Chutzpah. How can you say that? Right? Chutzpah. So I happened to be, it was our first time we went to, it wasn't the one in Yerushalayim. We went to the one, was it, I don't remember, Herzliya maybe? I forgot. And my friend said to me, what did you get there? I go, I had the most delicious filet mignon. Oh, it was delicious. It was so good. Sirloin steak. Oh, it was delicious. He says, as a joke, knowing I'm not Sephardi, he says, you're Sephardi? I go, no, why? He said, didn't you see what it says on the menu? I go, what are you... And I pulled the menu off the website. On the English menu, it doesn't say anything. On the Hebrew menu, it says, why? Because they have a mesorah. The Sephardim learn, their shochtim know exactly how to take out that. We don't play with it at all. We don't take out the, we're scared, right? To take out the Gid Hanoshe, right? We don't even play with it at all. So we totally cut it out, and anytime you think there's a sirloin, it's not real. Sephardim hold that they know how to take out the vein, they know how to do the whole thing, and they hold from it. We Ashkenazim are not supposed to have that. But again, this is another example of, like, people think you're crazy, and I say this all the time. When you start business, the number one thing you want people, I'm serious now, to think about yourself is that you are crazy. Crazy. Don't start explaining to them. Well, right? You'll never be able to explain to them. Right? Shabbos, you know, a little bit, you'll be able to explain to them. Right? Why am I... Right? Many people start their jobs right after college. So a lot of times it comes up, it's September. So now it's September time. And now you tell them, oh by the way, I'm going to be off for Rosh Hashanah. They're like, oh, we heard of Rosh Hashanah. They're like, oh, that's weird. Because the other Jewish guy in the office, he only takes one day Rosh Hashanah. You know? He only holds one day Rosh Hashanah. And then you have Yom Kippur. And they say, wait a minute, but Yom Kippur last year, Bob didn't take off then. He's like, no, it was because last year was on Sunday. That's why it was like, you know, you get all these shilas. And then you sponsor to explain to them, you say, oh, I'm also taking off 2 days because of Sukkot. They're like, Sukkot? That I never heard of. I'm like, well, I got another surprise for you. A week later, I have something called Shmini Atzeres. Right? So now it's September. You've been off for like 12 days already. Trying to explain that. He says, well, it's Hoshana Rabbah. I have to come in late because I have a long tefillah. Right? Yes, we say this every day in Uvel Etzion. We are different. That's the greatest thing. The challenge you have, which we don't have as much, but I know in the previous generation was, people didn't wear yarmulkes. It was common. Yesterday was the yurtzeit of my grandfather, Yaakov Yitzchak ben Nachman Dov, Neshama Shem Avin Aliyah. Amen. And so he was one who was president of a university. He was the first Orthodox president of a secular university. Kingsborough Community College is one of the founders of it. And he was the founding president. And in that generation, nobody wore a yarmulke. It was a common not to wear a yarmulke. The problem with that, the challenge of that, I should say, is nobody really knows that they think you're all like them. We just said this. We're all wearing, right? I don't want to go through the room here. But we're all wearing different types of clothing that are not Jewish in their sense. I just opened this up. Tommy Hilfiger. Got it at Century 21. No, they're closing Century 21. $7 for Bonin Shaven. Yeah, yeah. Get on a plane now and go. Right? So we're all wearing like this. But what is that? What company is that even? Boat company. What? You don't remember. See, good, good. Well, here we go. We got it. We're going to do an investigation. What did it say?
IZOD.
Right? So we hold that there's nothing really wrong with that. We actually, our next year when we get back to normal, non-COVID, whatever you guys are in now, hopefully you'll all be negative, Amir Tzashem. We're going to discuss the topic of holiday parties in Halacha. A huge topic, right? This is the time of the year, right? Holiday parties, a big topic, right?
Right, holiday parties.
Right. We call them a holiday party. We think it's holiday and it's cheer and it's fair. And all of a sudden, people start going home with people that they're not married to. I'm serious now. People get drunk and do things that they certainly regret. So, one of the central ideas is for a person to recognize, yeah, on one hand, we look like them, but v'hivdilanim v'natoyim. So let's just discuss very briefly the laws of Yichud, because I think it relates obviously directly to Dina and the incident there. So we'll discuss a good number of weeks from now, and you'll probably forget this by that time. There's two major halachos that you need to know for Yichud. Yichud, obviously the law is the Gemara and Kedushin that tells us that you cannot be alone. You're not allowed to be alone with a woman. Right? And yes, it's true. It's even worse if, you know, people said to me, oh, but I'm engaged to her. I'm like, oh, that's 1,000 times worse. Right? Because there's going to be more of a taiva there. You can't be alone in a room. So this is like the perfect example Hashem could have given me of what we call heter number one. Pesach Pesuach L'Rishos HaRabba. Right? There's an open door people can come in. And even if, it doesn't literally mean have to be a door open, but let's say I'm with my girlfriend over here, right? Let's say we're not in the base medrash because it's getting a little, right? I'm in the base medrash, not in the base medrash, sorry. I'm in another place. And I'm here. And I'm alone with my girlfriend. There's mechitzas. The whole thing is perfect. This is like a perfect scenario of Yichud. Of course, it's not. Why? Because you could see it. You could see me, right? That's why they created this. I mean, whoever makes this plastic is like multi-billionaires now, right? All these weird things that made money during COVID. So I'm behind plastic. So much so, by the way, that halachically, not only is this a mechitza, this is a mechitza according to the Ministry of Health. So if any one of you, God forbid, are test positive, I don't have to go into bidud. That's the only reason why, by the way, I'm teaching here, because this is the safest place to teach, right? I don't want to go into private class, right? Machlik is a hapoiskim in the Misrata Briyut, what would happen if. But here, this is a perfect scenario. But it's also a perfect scenario. Pesach Mesuach L'Rishos HaRabim. So if these Me Too people who got in trouble, right? If they would have practiced this basic law of saying, I cannot be alone with a woman unless there's a door open, unless I know somebody's going to come in. This comes up, as we'll discuss, in what do you guys think about the following case? The doctor's office. So now I actually am going to the doctor's office and I want privacy. So now you have a woman who goes and sees her doctor and she has to take off part of her clothes, and obviously it's embarrassing. She doesn't want to be like, no, but everything's, what do you mean? We're in a private room. Like, what do you, nobody would want to do that here. So then how are we going to allow it? What if he does lock the door? What do you guys say? Why would that be allowed? He's a doctor. The woman says, can you please lock the door? I'm embarrassed. I don't want anybody walking in by mistake. What do you guys think? Why would that be allowed? You hear the case? Everybody hears the case? What? I don't like Pekuach Nefesh so much. It's a good answer. I don't like it because it's not Pekuach Nefesh Mamish. I could come up with another scenario that, let's get a woman doctor. It's not Pekuach Nefesh. Yeah. What? I can't hear you. I'm sorry.
Human dignity.
What did he say?
Human dignity.
Meaning, Kavod HaBriyot. Sorry. Thank you. I'm trying. It's hard for me to. Kavod HaBriyot. In what sense? Meaning, yeah, go ahead. That we're going to say for human dignity, I'm just embellishing what you're saying, for human dignity, for sneeze reasons, because of the inappropriate nature, so I have to lock a door, because if not, what am I going to, like you just said, I'm going to create barriers like this and say, I want something even better. I'll give you a clue.
The Hippocrates Oath have anything to do with it?
The what?
The Hippocrates Oath.
What about who we're dealing with? That's my question. Who are we dealing with here? We're dealing with a doctor. Forget about Pekuach Nefesh. What? Oh, very good. Excellent. Thank you for using one of my shurim in my favor. Right? So we said last time, according to the Rambam, The Rambam, who's the strictest and tells us that Negiya is Asar Afilu Chibuk Vinishuk, right? There's no heter to do anything with your girlfriend because the Rambam says it's a Doraisa and writes this in Sefer Mitzvot as well. But he says the great words of Derech Taiva. Rav Moshe Feinstein took that Derech Taiva on the subways and said, so you bump into a woman, it's not an Issa Doraisa. So you're going to taina. Not only is it not Derech Taiva, I embellish twice now, but not only is it Derech Taiva, but he's a professional. So let me tell you the scenario. If the doctor was to now come into the office, lock the door, and try to do something to this woman, and she does not agree to it, what's going to happen to him? He's going to go to jail. He's going to lose his license for sure, if nothing else. He will lose his license. I always tell the story. I'll tell it again. I love the story. Rav Zilberstein, those who haven't met Rav Zilberstein, his sefarim are in the back. When you guys go Shunabet, you'll be able to use this sefarim. They're back in the basement, in the Shunabet side. And so Rav Zilberstein has crazy shilas. Rav Zilberstein is a Rav right outside of Bnei Brak, Ramat El-Hanan, and he just gets the crazy shilas. And he's got these amazing books called What If, Alin L'Shabeach, V'Harevna, V'Chulu. So he's asked the following question. It's crazy. there's a woman who, Nebuch, she's a little bit lonely, and she goes to the doctor every week. Not really because she's sick. And she bothers the heck out of the doctor. Here in Israel, it's free, right? There's no copay there. You can go to the doctor, right? And she, whatever, she's an older woman, and she says, it comes in one day, and she says, you know, this hurts me. You know, when I go like this, it hurts me. Like, doctor, don't do that. Nobody do that more. Whatever. And she's also annoying. She's fine. So this is one of those days here in Eretz Yisrael, I could certainly appreciate this, where she, it takes a very long time. And she's waiting for like an hour, and finally, and she goes in and she says, you're the worst doctor. I don't know how you, when you make people wait like this, you're disgusting. And she just starts berating on him. And he doesn't know what came over him. He picks up his hand, slaps her across the face. He says, enough already. You're so annoying. You come every week. And she's shocked. She gets up and she leaves. And he starts running after, realizing how horrible what he did with Dan, you know. We could cover it up if we did it to our kid, you know, buy him an ice cream or something. And he follows her all the way home. And he gets to the house and he says to her, please, I'm begging you, please, I made a mistake, anything, whatever. And he says, you know, the rest of whatever visit you have, you can come every day. Da, da, da. She says, no, nothing. So he's in a little trouble. And he decides to pay a visit the next day. She's had a chance to think about it. And he comes in and she says, okay, I thought about it. He says, I realized that I could be sued for malpractice, right? I could be sued, whatever it would be called, not malpractice that he did anything medically wrong. So he says, I'm willing to give you $1,000. Give you $1,000 to keep your mouth shut. She says, $1,000? I'm not stupid. I want $10,000, right? And he's like, that's crazy, that's blackmail. And he goes, yeah, it is blackmail, 100%. Yeah, I know what it is. So now what happens, it's funny, he gives her the money, and now it's before Rosh Hashanah, and this woman calls Rav Zilberstein and says, should I give the money back? Like, you know, we all get very religious around Rosh Hashanah time, you know? I did something wrong. So interestingly enough, Rav Zilberstein argues that when it comes to a doctor, he said, he did something that you are 100% within your means to call the police, to file a report. Even if you get no money, he's going to be for sure, they're going to take his medical license away. That's the first thing that's going to happen, right? Lawyer is the same thing. So he says, I don't think you did anything wrong here. Then he talks about Midine Shamayim as before Rosh Hashanah. Maybe you should, you know, use the money for good, or maybe return the money. But the point is, it shows you that when it comes to a professional, we assume. Now, nowadays, if I'm not mistaken, I don't think medical offices lock doors anymore, or they know, they make sure the secretary has the ability of the nurse to come in so that there's no yichud situations because of the, unfortunately, the generations that we live in of sexual immorality, which is really how we should have started this year. I always start this year with I was once searching on Bar Ilan, and I came up with a sefer of the Chachmei Teiman. And they wrote, this is at least 100 years ago, that we don't understand most of the Yetzirahs that are around, right? When we read the Torah, especially these parshas, you read about Avram Avinu destroyed all the idols of his father's idol store, right? Thank you. We don't I thought you were walking out because I said something wrong. Right? We don't understand that. We don't understand, right? Who's worshiping God? Last week's parsha, right? They sat on the truffin, right? They were sitting on the shoes. We cannot understand Avodah Zarah for like the life of us. It's so hard to understand. I totally get it. Says this Sefer, you know what could really, really understand? What makes total sense? The Yetzirah for sexual immorality. And that's repeated over and over in the Torah. And that I totally get, right? But you think about, in many parshas from now, the incident with Pinchas. The reason why I raise it is because many draw a similarity between what Pinchas did, right, and what Shimon and Levi do in our parasha with Shechem. Some draw a dissimilarity and say that it's nothing like it, because there is something called being zealous, and then there's something called being jealous. Right? The brothers wanted to, they were, I don't want to say the word jealous, but they wanted revenge. Back in my day, I remember when I was in Camp Morasha. And in Camp Morasha, when I was a counselor there, so every week we had the schus of having the great Rosh Hashiva of Mordechai Willick. He came from the Kollel. We thought the Kollel was like this Irim Miklad, you know, nothing to do with camp. And he gave a shiur every week. Somebody would organize a shiur, I actually know who it was, and would give a crazy topic to get people to go. Who's going to go to a shiur? What's a shiur? Right? So I remember that week was Parshas Pinchas, and this was the topic. You guys heard about O.J. Simpson, right? So it said O.J. Simpson and Pinchas. Same, different, like something like that. Everybody, I remember it was like 100 people in the shiur. And Rabbi Willig's vort was a perfect vort. He says, what's his what? Let's remember the story of O.J. Simpson, right? O.J. Simpson is the perfect Pinchas case. But let's first remember the story of Pinchas. You had the story of Pinchas, where, right, you had, it starts really from Parshas Balak, where Bilam tries to curse the Jewish people, and every time he tries to, Matovu Alecha Yaakov comes out, right? All these great things come out, right? And he can't curse the Jewish people. And then he comes home, and Balak's pretty mad at him, and they go, I got an idea. We'll send out the daughters of Midian. Jews cannot resist sexual immorality. That's what they say. And they have this, whatever different midrashim you want to take, but they come into their thing. They said, before you sleep with me, bow down to my idol, whatever. And it worked. And comes along one of the people who was known very much, infamous person, right? Zimri and Cusby, and they're having an affair. And Pinchas ben Elazar comes out, ben Aaron HaKohen, Heshiv Chamasi, the person who is from the descendants of Aaron. Dafka pointed out that it's Aaron HaKohen. Oyev Shalom Radosh, so we have to put a stop to this. And Heshiv Chamasi, Apnei Adamani, kills him. Isn't it a similar case to you had a Jew by the name of Nicole, what was her last name? No, it wasn't. Nicole, I forget now, I apologize. Thank God my Nikias isn't so good. Nicole Simpson, but she had another name, right? And she was sleeping with the other guy, Ronald Goldman, maybe I think his name was, who was Jewish. This is the case for Boyside. We're back to Midian. The Jew and the non-Jew, right? She wasn't Jewish, he was Jew. Comes, not Pinchas ben Elazar, O.J. Simpson ben Aaron, no, right? And he comes, okay, he wasn't. Heshi Chamasi al Pnei Adam, and he kills both. So says Rabbi Willig. Right. So he says, what was the difference? The difference was one did it because he was a zealous. He did it with shame Hashem, and one did it because he was jealous. He didn't care about Hashem. The difference, by the way, just one more difference, between the great story that they tell about Esav, right? One of the experiences you should have in your Shana Aleph should be is that you should try your best to shake your mind and take out preconceived notions that you heard about things, right? Unfortunately, the way our life is that the first incident when we, you know, in kindergarten when we heard the stories of the Torah, right? You got to delve more into the Torah. My son is Baruch Hashem. My son Aaron is now learning Shnai Mikra Vecher Targum. So every week he comes to me and he says, "Do you know what Rashi says about?" I didn't know that was the story, right? And this is a kid, you know, grew up in Eretz Yisrael, you know, like, that's the real story? That's not what we were told, right? In this week's parsha, what we're talking about now, Dina, right? You know, how many They skip over it. Oh, I thought Dina was just... that's not the story. Read the story. Right? So Esav, right? The famous question, what happened there with Esav? Yeah. Is it possible Yitzhak saw potential in him? So one idea is, wait a minute. You know who he killed? He killed Nimrod. Nimrod was the worst of the worst. He was the Hitler of the generation, of their generation. So I see why Yitzhak wanted him to be. You know why he killed him? Not because he said, we got to stop this terrible person, this despot. What?
He wanted his coat.
Yeah, exactly. He wanted to kill him because he wanted his stuff. That's different. So we bottom line, we have to recognize that we're different, and there are different rules and regulations, and we have to act differently, but again, for the right reasons. So now, back to our story, and that just to that would be the question of Shimon and Levi, why they exactly did it. Was it right? Was it wrong? Weiter. So now we went back. Let's go back to our case of Yichud. So Pesach Pesuch Lushos Arabim, one possible heter, which is important, would be in a professional office, right? What are we going to say in a professional office? He's not going to do anything. Now, this is opposed to what I already spoke about last week, if you remember. What about a massage therapist? What about going and getting a nice massage, and she happens to be a woman, right? Her name happens to be obviously Bubbles, right? So to go to Bubbles, not Sprinzel, you're not going to go to Sprinzel, right? That's not going to happen. But to go to a massage, so why would that, so now fight with me now. Isn't that the same thing over here? She's a professional. She you go in for the massage, she locks the door, she has to lock the door. I mean, you're half naked. New, what do you say about that, guys?
Yeah, the profession itself is essential.
What?
The profession itself is like essential.
Very good, right. The professional itself is, and I'm 100%, you can never ever get a massage from a woman. 100% usher, right? Why? Because I believe, as you quoted, right? The Rambam's going to say what? The Rambam's going to tell us that
Derech Taiva.
No, it's not Derech Taiva, right? I say that my number one question I get after Shana Aleph, the guys say, I remember you gave a shiur on Yichud. So let me ask you a question. My housekeeper, I just realized, you know, some guys, this dawns upon them, the bulb goes off where they're like, uh-oh. I have Yichud all the time. I have a housekeeper. I have she's here every single day, or she comes once a week. And my parents go to work. And now, Baruch Hashem, I'm a real stark Shana Aleph guy. And it's after my year in Israel. Obviously, I wake up every morning for Minyan. And I come home, and all of a sudden I realize I want to go to sleep now for another 16 hours, and there's this lady here. So what's the text I get always? Ready for this? This is the world we live in now. WhatsApp world. Rebbe, isn't it mutter? Here's a picture of what she looks like. Right? So even if you have the massage therapist, but Rebbe, she's ugly. Doesn't matter.
Have people actually sent you a picture?
Yeah, the one guy who was really disgusting. Oh. Yeah, it was a long time ago.
Couldn't there be a head there if you had this person since you were born?
No, absolutely not.
How does the stepmother work?
No. Oh, so stepmother, I thought that's where you were going with this.
Exactly.
Yeah. So adopted, right. Adopted mothers and stepmothers. I don't have time to go into the unique nature of that. That might be different. Although, if you remember this year that we gave a few weeks ago, according to Rav Moshe Sternbach, it's Yehorig Val Yavor. He says you can never touch a stepmother. Others like Rav Moshe Feinstein might have different heterim, certainly when the kid's under bar mitzvah, for sure. But there are a lot of poskim who say that you would still have to avoid it in the case where it's after bar mitzvah and the kid knows about it. The kid doesn't know about it. There are unfortunately parents, like the story I told of Sternbach, where this person didn't know about it until the kid was already at least 18, 20 years old, it seems. So in that story that I told, there is no heter. There is heterim, though. I said, I always like to say to the boy, listen, I'm not a poskim, I'm not, but there are heterim. And this is what we're discussing today. What are the possible heterim? So invite a friend over, right? Again, I don't recommend this as if this is an everyday thing. But this has happened to me before, right? Back in the day, we used to have a cleaning lady come until my wife realized that she cleans much better than the cleaning lady. And we're just paying her to do nothing. But she would come. Right, exactly. So we always say she was really good at sponging, which my wife doesn't think she's good at. But nothing else was ever clean. We would say to her things like, can you clean the windows? And she would laugh. Windows? I don't do windows. We're like, what do you mean? Anyway, fine. Weiter. So So comes along, again, a possible heter, would be the following. If I know a situation where, again, to me, this is not, right? So I was just saying to you about my clean lady. So she used to come every Wednesday. So usually, I would dafka every Wednesday. I would teach the entire day Wednesday, right? My wife goes to work. This woman, that's why she had her, because she was at work that day. And I would make sure not to stay up. But let's say I have to be home for something, whatever it is. I want to go on the treadmill. I'm allowed to. It's my house. So how do we work around this? So we could first argue Pesach Pesur Chlu Rosh Hashanah. That's not so simple. Why? It depends what community you live in. Do people really walk into your house? Even if you leave the door, Baruch Hashem, there's still communities around that people leave the doors unlocked. Is somebody going to really potentially walk in? Or you know that anybody who ever comes to your house, they always knock before. So then that's not a good heter. If reasonably not nobody's going to come in, that's not a good heter. But maybe we could say that if you invite somebody to your house, right? And some poskim think that this would be a good idea, this would work, right? And you reasonably believe he'll come to your house, right? Not the guy you say to your friend, hey, dude, my housekeeper's here the whole day. Can you please stop in if you don't mind? He writes, I don't think I'll be able to. So I actually have somebody on my block who used to be my go-to guy. He did not understand what this meant. And I would always come over. He thought I was asking him to come over and hang out. So I'm going to run on the treadmill. And he's like, dude, you told me to come over. I'm like, oh, forget. Right. But that's what should happen. That could be a possible heter. Now, it's possible also that, let's just say I'm working in my house. All right, I'm writing, whatever. I'm writing my essays for college. So maybe it could be that I could be in front of a window. That might help and somebody could reasonably see. That could be another heter. Even in a case where you could have a situation where it would be in the middle of the night, let's say. I had the situation once. I'll just give you the heter that was given to me. Not a pashut situation. So when my daughter was born, it was, as usual, like in the middle of the night type of situation. And by the time everything was over, it was like whatever it was, 12 o'clock in the morning. And my wife says, I don't want you sleeping in the hospital, as I did for my first child, my second child, because she wants my son to wake up. He's going to be scared that my in-laws were there. They're scary people. So they're going to be scared. So he says, I'd rather you sleep at home. And this way, so great, I'm driving home. And I call my mother-in-law to not scare her. I said, it's 12:30 at night. It's going to be scary. So I said, I mentioned something. I said, oh, how's my father-in-law going to get to work? He goes, what do you mean? He left a long time ago. He went back to Staten Island. And then I realized, oh my God, I'm now going to be alone in the house with my mother-in-law. Ah, you're all going to tighten up. You're crazy. It's your mother-in-law. Have you seen your mother? Like, come on, you know. So I didn't know what to do. And this is really embarrassing now because I don't know the heter. Here, Rabbi Hartzi, I don't know the heter. I don't know what to do. So this is before the days of, you know, you didn't WhatsApp or text it. I called my rabbi, Rabbi Soleske. I said, I'm so sorry to call you. I have a problem. I can't, what am I going to do? Kick my mother-in-law out of the house? Tell her to go home? What am I going to do? So he says to me, no problem. The moment you come home, before you come home, come to my house. It's okay. I come to the house, and he says to me, give me the keys to your house. You have keys? Yeah. He says, leave me the keys to your house. He says, I'm going to come during the night. I'm going to come to your house. So I'm like, no, really? He goes, no, really. Don't turn the alarm on. I'm going to come to your house tonight. Right? That's a shasat chak heter that I don't recommend. But that was the heter that was given to me. Again, that's a real shasat chak, and you know everybody has to consult their local rabbi. Don't use it. You know, I once had a wonderful conversation with Rav Reuven Feinstein, the great son of Rav Moshe Feinstein. His brother, Rav David Feinstein, just passed away. So yeah, go ahead.
What does that mean? Did you say it's a
shasat chak, meaning emergency situation, right? We normally. Oftentimes, I would ask Shilas to my Rebbe, as I'm about to say, to Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, and he would often turn back to me and said to me, you know, this is just for this situation. This isn't something you should use all the time. So Rav Reuven Feinstein, the son of Rav Moshe Feinstein, told me once that he, obviously his father knew that he was going to write, the great Rav Moshe Feinstein was going to write many, many tshuvas, but he said, be very careful that we don't paskin halacha like my father's tshuvas. What he meant was, you still have to ask a rabbi. We become, you know, now that we have Rabbi Google and we can ask anything to, you know, to Rabbi Siri or Rabbi Alexis. Now that we can do that, so we think we can pass an halacha ourselves, and that's wrong, and that's where Reuven Feinstein said my father would not want that. He would want people to still ask. The rabbi's allowed to say based on Rav Moshe Feinstein's psak that you're allowed to do, but don't read a tshuva. He says the situation. He gave me a few examples where he said the situation today is much different. Rav Moshe wrote that tshuva in 1967. And things have changed. That's important. So that's one possibility, what we said. Another thing which is interesting is the heter, which is an interesting heter, called Ba'alo Ba'ir. This only applies to the woman. It doesn't apply to us, it applies to the woman. So if you have a situation where you're a woman...
Oh, elevator with a woman.
Yeah, yeah, very good.
Get,
Rav Moshe finds in Shuva.
You get
45
yeah. minutes.
What?
You get four minutes.
Yeah, so it's funny. We get that from right the elevator. So Rav Moshe was asked the question, which was turned out to be an incorrect assumption, which was when the Empire State Building was built, so they said, wow, this is going to be the first time you can get into an elevator and go all the way up to the 100th floor. It could take 2, 3, 4 minutes. And you could be alone with a woman. But first of all, the whole thing's not correct because the way it works, I don't know why, you can't go all the way up to 100. You have to switch elevators. I don't know why that is, but that's just the way that it is. So you go to, I'm just making up, from 1 to 63, 63 to 100, whatever. So there's no yichud. And nobody's ever alone. They always make sure that there's people. I'm saying they want to fill the elevators. That's the whole point is if you go into the observation deck, with COVID and whatever. So, yes. The Gemara talks about yichud as the time it make to fry an egg. Maybe what's that time? We use this yichud time actually for a chasen and kala. When a chasen and kala go into the yichud room, we're very machmir. People say a lot more minutes than it has to be, and normally they never come out of there anyway. But it's not a lot of minutes. It's not you want to say again the lowest level in the 2.5 minute range. We have 3-4. It's not so pushing. So that's not the greatest hatter. One possible heter, as we said, is a Ba'alo Ba'ir. So let's go back to Ba'alo Ba'ir. So what's Ba'alo Ba'ir? The husband's in town. What does that mean, the husband's in town? So this is a very common thing that happens all the time. The wife, let's say today, my wife is home, let's say, and the electrician's coming. So now I have to say, wait, what time is he coming? Call me so I can come home? No. The assumption is, Ba'alo Ba'ir, as the Gemara says, and the Shulchan Aruch codifies, right? She's scared. Women are different than men. We probably do not apply this. Rav Moshe Feinstein said this as well. Rav Felder writes in his Sefer that Rav Moshe felt that this doesn't apply the other way around. A husband, unfortunately, is not so scared, right? A husband has the electrician, and she's a lady. The cable girl come. He can do something, and he doesn't think to himself that his wife might be home at any moment. So there wouldn't be that heter. Rabbi Felder writes, if the wife, the wife's friend is over and she makes her a cup of coffee, she says, I ran out of milk, and she goes across the street to her neighbor to get the milk, that's not considered to be yichud. Even if it's more than the time that would be yichud, he said, because your wife's about to come home. But for the husband it would be. So Rav Moshe has a different tshuvas, we'll do this when we do the laws of yichud, where Rav Moshe writes different fun tshuvas on this. He says, how about the following? I'll give you the two cases. Case number one, I'll give you three cases. Yeah. So case number one, the husband is a doctor. And he calls and he says, honey, I'm about to go into surgery, brain surgery. I won't be able to speak to you for another 8 hours. That's how long the surgery is. So what does she say? Perfect. Ba'alo Ba'ir, even though my husband, the hospital is a 5-minute drive, right? Even though, yeah, potentially, right away he can kill the patient and then the surgery's over, top of it, right? But most probably he'll be in there for 8 hours. And that's what she thinks. And there's no fear factor there. Case number two is a funny case. Ba'alo Ba'ir, the husband's in jail. Right? She's a block away in jail. She wants to be no closer to her husband. Right? So unless it's Shawshank Redemption and they're going to break out of, right? It's prison break. It's not happening. So she's not scared. Right? And case number three is, what is Ba'alo Ba'ir? What is ear? And this is a big question depending on where you live. Rav Moshe finds in his time to find the five boroughs of New York City. Right? So not everybody knows what I'm talking about, but to go from one place to the other, right, could be Ba'ir, right? You say, well, I'm in New York City now. I work in Queens, and I live in Staten Island. Right. What? But it could take you an hour and a half to get home. The same way, a person could define even within Yerushalayim. This is the later poskim of Shlomo Zalman Auerbach and others ask this question as well. It's going to take me a long time to get home. And Leheter, the other way around, two cities that are close to each other, right? A guy works in Tel Aviv and he lives in Ramat Gan. They're right next to each other, right? So Teaneck Bergenfield, it's the same thing, right? So that would be Ba'ir. Just one important heter, one important chumra that doesn't apply is what the Gemara calls Liba Gaspa. Means if she had a previous relationship with this guy, it's an old high school boyfriend, or he even writes it's a relative, that's a relative that you could marry, then that doesn't apply. I argue today, how far we would go with this. What does it mean you had a previous relationship with the person? See, as we just said, the ability and the possibility of a man starting up with a woman, right? The husband doesn't care about his wife. He doesn't think about the ramifications, right? But nowadays that everybody's WhatsApping everyone and so on and so forth, this is my own two cents about this. I think it's a very, very bad thing that people have WhatsApp relationships with people that are not their wives of the opposite sex. Many, many moons ago in this exact room, Rabbi Fass, myself, and I think it was Rami Goldberg, we gave, this is before I even worked in the yeshiva, before I didn't work in the yeshiva. So Rami Goldberg gave a class, I'm sorry, we had a symposium, the three of us, about business and halacha. So Rabbi Fass had two quick points, and he said these are game changers in business. This is what he said. He said, number one, and I think this you could just extract from this what I'm saying. He says, never, ever, ever sit on a plane next to a woman that you know that's not your wife, right? Sometimes people travel. This happens in the business world all the time, right? You go on a business trip, and there might be a bunch of people going on the same business trip, right? I remember my first business trip. I was so excited, right? I was married already, and I went to Las Vegas, the city of sin. We had to go to Las Vegas. There was like 25 people on the plane from our company. It was like a huge thing. So you said, oh, you're all getting seats in the office. You say, oh, we'll all sit together. No. Plane is a very intimate thing. You're right next to the person, and we understand why the Haredim don't want to be next to, right? You could casually touch the person. You start talking. You have blankets. You have all these things. It's not a good idea. The second thing Rabbi Fass said is that if you have in Mirz Hashem, you should be zeichet that you could have one day an office, right? Not everybody has an office. If you have an office, right? Nowadays in the yeshiva, all the offices, I believe, have windows and so on and so forth. That's the way that it should be. But always keep the door open if a woman comes in. I've been lucky. I think all the offices I've ever had have open windows.
Glass doors
is fine. Right, glass doors is fine, as long as the people can see it. Right? Not that it's technically halachah liyichud. That's not a problem. Forget about it. It's that intimate talking. I don't want to start it. That's why I'm against the WhatsApp thing. Yeah?
The female taxi driver going in the middle of
the I don't think so. Rav Moshe Feinstein asked the question. You have a very, it's a good, very good question.
Would it depend where?
Why?
Because if the taxi driver is taking you from, the middle of Kansas to someplace, you've not seen people.
Exactly. Yes, correct. That's where Moshe Feinstein's at.
You brought up the example of somebody driving up.
The camp.
The camp.
Yeah, so Rav Moshe has a very strange tshuva. Excuse me for calling it a strange tshuva, because I don't understand it 100%. He says that anytime you're driving, that you could go on a date. What about going on a date? You're going on a date with a girl. Hopefully with a girl. Right, you're going on a date, and why is that not yichud? So says Rav Moshe Feinstein, he's nervous. Because anytime you're driving, it's so easy for you to get off the highway, right? So the conventional wisdom says it's not yichud because you're going to drive on a highway, and a highway there's going to be cars passing all the time, and you're not going to start fooling around in the car. Like that's just crazy talk, right? But he said you could always get off the highway and go into the scenic, lover's lane or whatever it is. He's nervous about that. So I don't understand that so well, because you could say that when you stop walking around, I'm walking in the street, I could always go off to a... So many contemporary poskim say that the issue would be, like you said, going on a not often traveled road. And I think this is a huge problem. I had 2 years ago, I drive back and forth to Camp Misora every week, and I go early Monday morning. So someone contacted my wife. Her daughter is in camp. She hears that I go Monday morning. Perfect, they have a family wedding. Can I drive the girl Monday morning? So my wife's like, what do you think? I'm like, what do you think? Are you crazy? I go, she goes, I know, but this was like her. She's like, she's only 17 years old. I'm like, even worse. I said, first of all, anyway, I stop in the middle to go daven. So I said, I'm always going to sit in the car. I said, and I don't take a girl away. It's not a halacha. Probably wouldn't violate halacha. There's people, contemporary posting we're afraid of is more of the issue of the fact that if you're on a road, like going up to Camp Misora, there's a lot of times you go on, and nobody's around for, there's no way, nothing's going on. Nobody's looking at you, there's no way. If you're on a highway the whole time, okay. So I think that would be, so going back to the car question, so if you're in a car / the Uber or whatever, a taxi cab, I don't think we would argue, especially with Ubers now, Dafka with Ubers, oh, he's going to lose his license, whatever. I don't know how much they actually check these people anyway that they know what they're talking about. So I think that's a very good question, whether or not what we would say. if it's considered to be yichud. Again, so the heter would be, as long as we're going on traveled roads, we would be able to, even if, you know, I generally, when I land in New York, it's always a 4:30 in the morning. So you can choose your Uber driver. I mean, you could. But okay, I get Maria. Do I say no to it? Because I think it's there's still people on the road, even if it's 4 o'clock. It's amazing, but in America, certainly, you know, the city that never sleeps. But I think that there are people on the road. I don't think that would be the. Could she always? Rav Moshe would say she could, especially at 4 o'clock and it's still dark outside. She could veer off. I don't think that's so common and well accepted. Again, so just to end off. We started off in a place of Dina, trying to understand exactly what happened there. But in anything, the violation of Shechem was that they should have he should have known better. There was some sexual immorality here, and as we said, the Rambam writes they were destroyed because of the fact that they should have known better. There are laws that should have been established. We didn't exactly I should have concretized that statement, right? The Rambam says is that the people were killed again. Just trying to justify it a little bit, was because they didn't follow dinim shalahem. They have to follow their laws. They have to establish laws. They didn't. Dinim de mechusat din. It should have been. They should have said something. You see something, you say something. They didn't. And this got us to this whole discussion of, in the world in general, but really the business world this comes up, of how we have to protect ourselves. Right? Again, there's a lot more to discuss. I just discussed one area of yichud, but there's certainly the areas we spoke about in previous weeks of casual touching, and then areas which we won't discuss now, but we will have a discussion in Mirtz Hashem about, as Jews, how we protect ourselves. Right? We have Chukas Hagoyim, which we'll be discussing next week as far as holiday parties, but we also have laws like Bishul Akum, right, and different akums too, so that we don't intermingle, right? Yayin, right? Stam Yenam, that we make sure not to drink their wines, v'chulu v'chulu, all around the fact that we have to show that we are different. And Yaakov is the one really who defines this. And that's why Yaakov was so upset at this situation, because he was the one who should have defined, been the one that I always say is the Av of Golos. And in taking us to Golos, he's saying, no, we can be a, I don't know how to say the words, normal Jew, but we could be the Jew that we want to be. Living in both worlds, that's fine, because it's not both worlds, as we quoted Rav Huttner's statement. It's not a double life, it's a broad life that we have. But it has to be within following the rules and regulations and making sure we set Kedarim, because that's the most important thing, so that we show that we are different than the other nations.